Hi there, Dr. B with your Module 2 clarifying lecture. As always, I'll talk about announcements, and then I'll talk about your InterTeach, and then I will talk about your questions. Just some general announcements. When you're turning in your assignments, I'd appreciate it if you avoid the use of quotes. A lot of you put quotes in from the textbook into your InterTeach, and I would prefer that you not do that, because if you're quoting, that means I can't gauge how much you've learned by reading what you've done in your own words. So I really do appreciate it if you avoid the use of quotes in your assignments. Also, a note about formatting. So it might seem like I'm a little bit, mean about using Google Docs and Office 365 links, but there is a reason for it. So I am teaching four classes this term, along with private practice. So in order to get stuff back to you as quickly as possible, it needs to be super efficient. And so if you put your stuff in Office 365 and share a link, or Google Docs, you're more likely to get stuff back quicker. So please use those two ways of doing things so that I can expedite my feedback to you. Speaking of precision, speaking of me being precise, speaking of me being picky, I'm going to really emphasize the use of precise language in this course. And you might wonder why I'm so picky. Even Skinner's not as picky as I am. The textbook isn't as picky as I am. Why am I so big on this? The reason is because I want you to really get these principles as principles the way that they work in the world. And so sometimes when we use terms that are maybe a little off, for example, reinforcing people or desired behavior or getting the behavior we want, two things happen. The first is that we start to possibly drift to a more coercive type of way of doing things. So we start looking at this as something that we do to other people rather than these laws of behavior that happen all around us. The second is that we start to sound coercive. And so we start sounding like we're going around, trying to reinforce behavior we want, or somehow manipulating people. When we reinforce people, we're reinforcing a whole person. We're changing a person, not a specific behavior. So the more precise we are with these terms and concepts, the more likely, number one, we'll be able to use them correctly. And number two, we'll be talking about them correctly and really helping our PR in general. Because a lot of people who are against ABA are really looking at some of these kind of self-made videos and things online, some of the blogs, some of the ways we write, and using that to say that we manipulate people, we coerce people, we're gaslighting. So if we use the terms correctly, we're less likely to get some of that going. So that's why I'm going to be a stickler, and why it's important. A word about grading. And sometimes what I get is people trying to average averages. I got a 93% on this paper, I got a 63% on this paper, and so I'm going to add 93 and 63 and take the average of that. Do not do that. That's not how this class works. This class is weighted so that it's really a cumulative effect of everything you've done in the course. So what you really need to do is calculate the total number of points that you've earned and divide that by the total number of points you could have earned to date. And that's going to give you where you are in the course. So rather than looking at it like I got a 65 here, I must be failing, really look at this as a total number of points. And there's a lot of points left, especially with your final. So don't be afraid. There's lots of ways to go from here if you're feeling like, you're a little bit behind. Just so you know, resubmitted and late work will be graded after I have cleared the on-time submissions. This is another reason why it's really important to turn things in the format I'm requesting them, because you're just going to get your stuff back that much faster. Once I clear everything from all four courses that has been turned in on time, then I move to the late stuff. So if that gives you an idea of how I work. And the last thing is, and again, this is going to sound, I sound so like prickly and like an old lady in this, but the BACB really takes their trademarks very, very, very seriously. And they're really discouraging us from using BCBA other than to say, we're a BCBA for insurance purposes, things like that. They're going so far as to suggest that we even remove it from our titles on LinkedIn and Facebook because of misuse of trademarks. So if you have stuff on your social media, like I'm a BCBA in training or anything that says BCBA, I would suggest that you take that off because they do enforce that. Many, many years ago, I got my own cease and desist over that. They are looking, and you want to make sure that you're using those trademarks the way that the BACB has asked us to do. All right, let's get into InterTeach. I want to make sure that you're understanding a few really basic things about reinforcement. And there are things that we typically don't say correctly, so I want to make sure that you have the correct information about this. So the first and most important thing about reinforcement, or in general in behavior analysis, is that positive means to add and negative means to subtract. So positive always means to put something in the environment, and negative always means to take it away. We don't talk about good and bad behavior or happy and sad. We're not talking about this like psychology. We're talking about this like bio or chem. Okay, so think about positive and negative reinforcement mathematically, biologically, rather than psychologically. So when we're talking about positive reinforcement, we're adding something to the environment that increases its likelihood in the future, and that is huge. So you can say, I praise this, this specific behavior, but if it didn't happen again, it wasn't a reinforcer. Okay? And if it decreased, it was actually a punisher. So praise can act as a punisher. A little bit about negative reinforcement versus negative punishment and positive punishment. Remember that negative reinforcement always increases the probability of a response, desired or undesired. This works independently of our societal judgments about what's good, what's bad, everything like that. I sometimes do the classic example of, you text an ex and they, engage the texting, and the texting increases, and in the end you're crying. Guess what? That texting was positively reinforced. So especially with negative reinforcement and punishment, people can get a little confused about this. Negative reinforcement is the process by which something is taken away that increases a response. So if you go into a place that's too loud and you have access to the volume button and you turn it down, you have now reinforce that behavior of turning down the volume if it happens again. So turning down the volume is a negative reinforcer, making it more likely that turning down the volume will occur again in the future. If you've ever gotten into a car and you turn on the radio and it's blasting at you, turn it down, and then you do that the next time, that is negative reinforcement. Okay, it is not punishment. Punishment decreases the probability of a response by either introducing something aversive or taking away something that is reinforcing. And how can you tell if something is reinforcing or punishing? Well, you can't tell by something somebody likes. You can't tell by something that makes them happy. You can't tell by any type of emotion or verbal behavior or anything like that. The only way you can tell if something is reinforcing or punishing is to look at the effects on behavior. So if I do this the next time, if the situation presents itself next time and the response increases, that consequence was reinforcing. If the situation presents itself next time and I am less likely to do the thing, then that consequence was negatively reinforcing. And it's really important to understand that reinforcement is a process. So there's no such thing as reinforcements and punishments. And we'll get into this a little bit more deeply in 622. But when you have reinforcement is a verb. To reinforce is a verb. Okay, it's an active process. Reinforcers are nouns. So praise, if it increases responding, is a reinforcer. When praise is delivered contingent upon responding, that's reinforcement. And why is this important? Because we tend to think of reinforcement as a thing that you do to somebody to make them happy. And that is not the case. That is not what reinforcement is. Reinforcement doesn't have to be pretty. It doesn't have to make people happy. It just needs to strengthen the response. So think of reinforcement the same way you would if you're reinforcing something that's wobbly. Reinforcement strengthens a response. And so it's really important to make sure that you're also not saying that reinforcement motivates people to do things in the future. As we get into motivating operations, this will make a little bit more sense, but motivating operations are antecedents. So reinforcement, you can't have something that's both an antecedent and a consequence, generally. There are some exceptions to that rule, but in general, reinforcement, the process of reinforcement cannot motivate somebody to do something. It can only strengthen responding or increase the likelihood. Those are the two things it can do. And then let's see, talking about, again, we talked about why positive reinforcement doesn't encourage desired behavior, because number one, that sounds kind of coercive. And the other reason is because reinforcement strengthens responding. It doesn't encourage us to do anything. It happens independently of our cognition. So we don't have to think about it. We don't have to know that reinforcement's happening. We don't have to have any type of thoughts, feelings, understanding, or any of that. If it's reinforced, it continues. If it's not reinforced, it doesn't continue. End of story. Okay? Again, rewards versus reinforcement. A reward is just a happy thing that you give to somebody for being nice. That's it. Has no effect on behavior. It has no effect on the future probability of responding. It's just something nice. Rewards and reinforcers are not the same thing for the reasons that I talked about earlier. So make sure that you are not using reward and reinforcement interchangeably. That's really important. And the other thing is that we can't reinforce people. We can only reinforce their behavior. So if you're reinforcing a person, you're cloning them. You're increasing the likelihood that they will happen again. If you reinforce a behavior, you're increasing the likelihood that that behavior is going to happen again. Again, why is this important? Who cares? Skinner says reinforce a person. I believe BALC says reinforce a person. You see it all the time, reinforce a person. Again, it comes back to that coerciveness and trying to change people. So if you reinforce one behavior, you're changing one response, okay, in somebody's repertoire. If you are trying to reinforce a person, you're changing who they are. And we can't do that. That's not our job in behavior analysis. We don't try to change who people are. That's not what we're in the business of doing. We are in the process of changing specific responses. And we do that through reinforcement and also punishment. So we'll talk about the fact that you can't just not ever use punishment, because that's not how the world works. Some quick housekeeping things. Make sure that you are not using first person in your inner teach and you are not using quotes. If you're using first person, that looks like somebody answered the question by themselves, even if you have video to the contrary. So I want to make sure that you're not using first person in your inner teach. Again, if you're using quotes, I don't know what you know. So, because I can't go into your head and figure that out. So that is why I don't want you using quotes in inner teach. A couple of things that I wanted to talk a little bit about beyond the idea of reinforcement are things like explanatory fictions and also internal states and also some stuff around intrinsic and extrinsic motivation. So let's talk about explanatory fictions first. So explanatory fictions are things that we cannot see, we cannot measure, and we're saying that they are causes of behavior. And I'm going to put a whole list of these down, so I'm not going to give a lot of examples in this clarifying lecture. But what I want you to do, and this is your extra credit opportunity for Module 2, is I want you to go through that list, and I want you to identify one or two explanatory fictions and how to correct them. And so when I talk about explanatory fictions and mentalism, what I usually say is, if you remember the cartoon The Magic School Bus from the 1990s, I use what I call the Ms. Frizzle test. And Ms. Frizzle was a cartoon character that had a magic school bus that could shrink and expand as needed and go into places, could go into the body and stuff like that. So if Ms. Frizzle has to shrink her magic school bus and go into your head to observe that behavior, it's an explanatory fiction. I cannot reliably observe your private events. Okay, I can't observe them reliably. Anytime I'm talking about your private events, I'm making an educated guess. In behavior analysis, we try to avoid educated guesses. And also to that point is that all of the ways that we talk about behavior overtly then influence the ways that we talk about our own private events. So even our own first-person accounts of what we're observing within our skin aren't necessarily reliable, because they're really, they're very, very susceptible to influence. So that's why we stick to observable, measurable behavior. Not because thoughts and feelings don't exist, not because they don't influence things, not because they can't serve as antecedents or consequences, but because I can't measure them directly, okay? All I can do is make educated guesses. To that end, let's talk a little bit about intrinsic versus extrinsic motivation. So there was a guy named Alfie Cohn who published a book called Punished by Rewards, which we already talked about the problems with that title. And what he said was that external rewards decrease intrinsic motivation. And there were some studies that were done in the 90s that supposedly supported that. And here's the thing. Reinforcement doesn't change whether it's under the skin or it's outside of the skin. So if it's under the skin, we call it automatic reinforcement, because it's really a change automatically in your own personal body. There's nothing different from what happens within your skin as opposed to what happens outside in the bigger, larger environment. And in fact, what they're probably talking more about is contrived versus natural reinforcement. So contrived reinforcement is your behavior plan or when you do trials or anything like that. Natural reinforcement occurs all the time, usually without us even realizing it, knowing it, any of that type of thing. So if I am engaging in a behavior, if I keep doing it, most likely it's reinforced by something. Yeah, but I can't find that reinforcer. I don't know what it is. That's possible. It could be that it's so subtle that it doesn't really show up. Or it could be that over time, this your reinforcers and your reinforcement schedule for that behavior, or the reinforcement schedule for that behavior, not yours, has been faded to the point where it's barely perceptible. So it could be on like a VR 1000 or something like that. But there is no magical difference between internal and external motivation. Okay. There is a difference between contrived and natural reinforcement. That is true. But internal, yeah, extrinsic motivation, that's really kind of a fallacy. Let's see here. I got the reliable reporters. And the last thing I want to talk about is that we are behavior analysts. This is a huge pet peeve of most in the field behavior analysts. We are not behavioral analysts because we don't analyze behaviorally. We analyze behavior. We're behavior analysts, not behavioral analysts. And so that actually will set you apart in an interview for a job if you make sure that you say you're a behavior analyst. If you say you're a behavioral analyst, people might look at you a little bit differently. All right, questions. These are mostly about negative reinforcement. One was about the Prezi. When Claudia is late to work, her boss says that if she is on time every day and has her work done, she can leave up to an hour early on Fridays. The slides, this explains as negative reinforcement since she's escaping. How is an escape an example of negative reinforcement? If Yuvu is allowing her to leave, adding something she could do to get her way, so it should be positive reinforcement. Okay, so let's think about this. First of all, you always take the most simple response, okay? And you're always looking at the behaviors and the consequences that happen closest in time to each other. So, you know, you're always looking at surface, the first things first, okay? So let's look at Claudia. Claudia is late to work, okay? So one could assume, if they did the right types of assessments, that Claudia being late to work is functions as escape or avoidance of work within that hour. So her work day is shorter. So then what her boss is doing is saying, okay, I'm going to take away that hour of work, your work day is shorter. Therefore, if it works, that means that that is negative reinforcement because we've taken something away that increases responding, which is our on-time behavior. So if Claudia's on time, that worked. I also want to make sure that we're not talking about things like get her way. I know that there is a protocol called the My Way protocol, but suspend that for a second here. Because getting her way is an explanatory fiction. Because number one, Claudia probably doesn't even know what the function of her behavior is. And number two, we're assuming something's going on in Claudia's head that may or may not be happening. So it's important to talk about these events as this happened, then this. They happen reliably together. That's either reinforcement or punishment. Okay, so really take it more simply. I think that there's some overanalysis going on here. And this was also, the student receives a break and gets to leave the classroom. I think where the issue here is it positive or negative reinforcement is in the way you're wording it. So you're saying receives a break or gets to. I want you to take that out. I want you to say, contingent on this response, the student has a break.
Excuse me.
Or contingent upon this response, the student leaves the classroom. Okay, because gets to, again, there's a value judgment in there. And I think that's where some of the confusion about positive versus negative reinforcement is happening here. So negative reinforcement, student does X. As a result, they leave the classroom. Okay. If they do X again the next time, and again, that results in leaving the classroom early, something in the environment is taken away, staying in the classroom, therefore doing X is negatively reinforced. I think what's happening is that a lot of you are overanalyzing this. Yeah, but they're getting a break, so that then the getting means adding. Don't do that. Look at it as behavior, consequence. And if something is added to the environment as a consequence, that's positive reinforcement. If something is taken away from the environment as a consequence, and again, if behavior increases, that's negative reinforcement. Okay, so I think it'll be easier to think about these things if you stay away from things like seeking or gets to or things like that. All right, so thank you very much for listening, and have a great weekend, and we'll see you in Module 3.